the headlines. The Israeli military raids the offices of Palestinian human rights groups in the occupied West Bank as the regime keeps up with its atrocities. Britain is bracing for massive industrial strikes as millions are struggling to pay their energy bills. And China slams plans for fresh U.S.-Taiwan trade talks, warning it will take firm measures to defend its sovereignty. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The Israeli regime releases footage of its forces raiding the offices of Palestinian human rights groups in the occupied West Bank. The military says it closed seven institutions and confiscated property during the overnight raids. Senior Palestinian Authority official Hossein al-Sheikh censured the raids as an attempt to silence the voice of the truth and justice. Israel has labeled six Palestinian rights groups, quote, terrorist organizations without providing evidence for its allegations. The regime recently passed into law the terror designation of three of those rights groups. Last month, nine member states of the European Union, among them France and Germany, issued a joint statement saying they would continue to cooperate with those six groups. The statement cited lack of substantial information to justify the designation of those groups as the reason behind the decision. Earlier, we talked to our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, for more details about the Israeli raids on the Palestinian rights offices in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli military closed and confiscated equipment from seven Palestinian offices, seven Palestinian civil society and human rights organizations. Well, we have to mention, as you have said, six of these organizations that were raided on Thursday had been outlawed by Israel as a terrorist organization. Those organizations include Al-Damir Prisoner Support and the Human Rights Association. It works, of course, with the Palestinian prisoners and the prisoners' issue. There's also Al-Haq Rights Group, the Union Palestinian Women Committees. There's also the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, Bissan Center for Research and Development, Palestine Chapter of the Geneva-based Defense for Children International, DCI, this organization that works to follow up the issue of Palestinian children, the prisoners, of course, children, as well as the Palestinian children who are wounded and injured by the Israeli military. The seventh organization that was shot down today, and it's not included in the list seen by Israel as terrorists, is the Union of Health Work Committees.
Palestinians have submitted war crimes complaints against the Israeli regime to the International Criminal Court. The lawsuit by the International Center of Justice for Palestinians accuses Tel Aviv of unlawfully depriving Palestinians of property. It has filed on behalf of two families in the Gaza Strip and in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Al-Quds. It cites various examples in which the regime seized Palestinian lands and houses by force for its settlement activities or its separation wall. The complaint calls on the ICC to include the cases it has submitted or intends to submit as part of a formal investigation. Britons faced hardship getting around the country as railway staff once again walk out over pay. The industrial action by thousands of rail workers is the latest in a wave of strikes nationwide in the summer. The walkout is set to be repeated on Saturday. Meanwhile, workers at London Underground, as well as the city's bus network personnel, will go on strike on Friday. Other sectors are expected to stage walkouts as well. British postal workers employed by the Royal Mail have reportedly planned a 4-day strike from the end of August. British workers are discontent with their wages. They say the salaries does not keep pace with the rising prices in the country. Experts warn of an autumn of discontent as the Bank of England has predicted inflation will top the 13% mark later this year. China has warned the United States against signing any agreements with the Chinese Taipei, this after Washington announced plans for trade talks with the island.
China always opposes any country to negotiate or sign any commercial and trade agreements with sovereign connotations or of an official nature with the Taiwan region of China. We demand concrete actions from the U.S. side to strictly abide by the One China principle and the three Sino-U.S. joint communique, stop any form of official exchanges between the U.S. and Taiwan, and refrain from negotiating or signing agreements with the Taiwan region of China that have sovereign connotations or an official nature, and refrain from using economic and trade means to send any wrong signals to the Taiwan independent forces. Do not make mistakes again and again.
The Chinese official warned his country will take firm measures against violating the Chinese sovereignty. The U.S. officials say negotiations with Taiwan would cover a host of areas, including agriculture, digital trade, regulatory practices, and removing trade barriers. Taiwan says it is expecting extended economic collaboration with the U.S., but its largest trading partner by far remains China. Chinese officials have shown a flurry of stern reactions over the U.S.-Taiwan relations. Beijing says Washington's provocative actions threaten peace in Southeast Asia. Iran condemns Wednesday's bomb blast targeting a mosque in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. The foreign ministry, in a statement, expressed sympathy with the families of the victims. The attack took place at a mosque in northern Kabul where worshippers were holding evening prayers. The attack left 21 people dead and 33 others wounded. No group has claimed responsibility yet. Investigation is still underway. Turkey has gone ahead with its offensive in northern Syria. The attacks took place near the town of Kobani between Turkish soldiers and U.S.-backed Kurdish militants. This has raised the prospect of a war as the Syrian army has vowed to directly respond to Turkish attacks on its soil.
Tensions are rising between Turkey and Syria. Ankara has launched airstrikes on military posts in northern Syria, killing several army soldiers and injuring several more. There are now concerns that a military operation in northern Syria by Turkish forces is imminent. Sources say a new cross-border offensive by Turkey looms large. Turkish forces have reportedly used loudspeakers in mosques in border areas close to the Jarablus city to ask people to stay indoors in preparation for the operation. Reports also say numerous Turkish combat drones could be seen flying in the skies over areas in proximity to the frontier. Turkish soldiers are also mobilizing in most of the border towns of Hasaka, Raqqa, and Aleppo provinces. The Turkish president has already hinted at a possible military incursion. On August 8th, Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Ankara's decision to establish a 30-kilometer deep secure line along the country's southern border is final. Ankara says it's going to curb Kurdish militants operating in that area.
They want actually to annex the northern part of Syria. This is an ambition that Turkey has to regain, to enlarge some territory that it once had. And I think this is not something that is acceptable either to Syria or even to Russia. Russia wants to have good relations with Turkey, but not at this price, I think.
The U.S.-backed Kurdish People's Protection Unit, or YPG, militant group, which is the backbone of SDF, is present there. Ankara says YPG militants are terrorists. Damascus has warned Ankara against violating its sovereignty. Both Iran and Russia, which have been aiding Damascus in its anti-terror campaign, are also against Turkey's possible offensive. Turkey has deployed forces in Syria in violation of the Arab country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Ankara-backed militants were deployed to northeastern Syria in October 2019. Back then, Turkish forces launched a cross-border invasion to push YPG militants away. Since 2016, Turkey has launched three military operations inside Syria.
Turkey has reiterated its intention to create a 30-kilometer safe zone in northern Syria. In that case, this would overtake Kobani and other towns held by the so-called U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces. This would then bring Turkey into direct conflict with the U.S. Therefore, by default, it is the U.S. that is a source of instability. Washington has not only maintained its illegal presence in Syria, but keeps supporting Kurdish fighters and stealing Syrian oil.
When the crisis began on Syria in 2011, Ankara backed militants fighting against the government in Damascus. For years, it provided them with weapons and military support in a bid to topple the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
So this is perhaps just a what we sometimes call a red herring, that is something that will distract the observers from what is actually going on. It makes it appear, makes Turkey appear to be reasonable, when in fact they don't have a reasonable agenda at all. They have an unreasonable agenda.
However, there are signs that Turkey may have changed its policy on Syria. Just recently, it was revealed that the Turkish foreign minister had a brief conversation with his Syrian counterpart last October. The top Turkish diplomat has stressed that there needs to be a reconciliation between opposition groups and the Damascus government. There are reports that Ankara was evaluating the possibility of starting talks with the Syrian government. The leader of Turkey's Nationalist Movement Party has also supported comments to mend relations with neighboring Syria. Turkey now appears to be in a difficult position. The country's economy is now in its worst situation in decades. It's spending nearly $2 billion in northern Syria annually. And sentiments against Syrian refugees in Turkey are rising. That could potentially cost Erdogan his political career. In order to fix it, Erdogan needs to establish relations with Syria.
I think it's going to be a major problem. The Turkish attack indicates that they are not going to accept a reasonable compromise and to respect the territorial integrity of Syria. So this is going to be a major problem.
But at the same time, Ankara does not want to lose Syria card with regards to anti-Assad militants. However, its possible military adventure in northern Syria could trigger another catastrophe in a country which is in the midst of a prolonged crisis.
The Malian foreign minister accuses France of supporting terrorist groups in his country, where Paris maintained its military presence until a few days ago. In a letter to the UN Security Council, the minister calls for an urgent meeting in order for Bamako to present evidence. It says French fighter jets, drones and military helicopters breach Mali's airspace more than 50 times this year. The letter says those flagrant violations were used by France to collect intelligence for terrorist groups operating in the Sahel region and to drop arms and ammunition for them. France has rejected the allegations, which comes just days after it announced the final withdrawal of forces from Mali. France deployed troops to its former colony under the pretext of fighting terrorism, but many Malians consider the mission a failure. Our Paris-based correspondent Kristen Hunt sheds light on the main motive behind France's military operations in Mali.
If the Mali state, with the French intervention, which is called the France-Afrique, has been unable to chase these radical rebel groups, it means that it's a sign of the weakness of the state. There is a weakness of the economy. There is a weakness of providing education, healthcare. There is a lot of corruption. So the real reason of the French presence in this area, it must be considered as economic exploitation. So France absolutely wanted to prevent these radical rebel groups to take power in the north of Mali. Now, Mali has not on itself uranium mines, uranium groups, but it is its neighboring Niger, and Niger has important uranium mines. So France tried with this military intervention to prevent these radical rebel groups to take ground in the north of Mali. But it's a total failure, because if a military operation, it can be considered as a neo-colonial operation, is not combined with the social policy of the Mali state or of the French intervention itself, it fails. And now the French high officials and the French Élysée, the French presidency themselves, they admitted that it has been a failure.
India has decided to put Rohingya refugees at a detention center before deporting them to Myanmar, despite an earlier promise to provide them with a settler and security. The Federal Home Ministry, in a statement, has designated Rohingya illegal foreigners. That hours after a minister for housing and urban affairs outlined a plan to resettle these stateless Muslims to a remote area. The plan was seen as a potential change in the government's critical stance towards the refugee group. There are an estimated 40,000 Rohingyas in India. On Wednesday, UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet said it remained unsafe for the Rohingya to go back home. In the past, India faced severe criticism from the UN and rights groups as Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government tried to repatriate Rohingyas, citing security threats. Several blazes engulfing shanty towns in Delhi also exposed the plight of these refugees. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya fled to the country after Myanmar's army launched a deadly crackdown in 2017. And now, with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The House January 6 Committee and the Department of Justice continue to investigate Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 election, an incitement of the deadly U.S. Capitol attack. Donald Trump is also under investigation in New York over his business and tax affairs, and in Georgia regarding attempts to overturn his defeat by Joe Biden. We're prepared for you an article written by Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Source Says Trump Should Announce Run for 2024 Soon to Avoid Indictment. According to a senior source close to Donald Trump, if the former president wants to head off being indicted under the Espionage Act after the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago recently, he has to announce a campaign for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024 in the next 2 weeks. In communications reviewed by The Guardian, the source indicated Donald Trump needed to announce because politically it will be harder for the U.S. Department of Justice to indict a candidate for office than a former president out of the electoral running. A source also suggested Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump's only serious competitor in Republican polling, will not run in 2024 if Donald Trump chooses to enter the race. The source said of the Florida governor, he can wait. In contrast, a former White House official said Trump could yet decide not to run for fear of losing his grip on his party and role as a kingmaker should an indictment force him to drop out of the race. A search warrant unsealed on Friday, 12th of August, showed that the FBI seized from Mar-a-Lago 5 sets of top-secret documents, 3 sets of secret documents, and 3 sets of confidential documents, as well as other records. It was reported that some seized documents concerned nuclear weapons. Donald Trump called that report a hoax. The warrant also revealed Trump to be under investigation for possible violations of the Espionage Act, which dates from 1917 and has been used to go after whistleblowers. If charged and convicted, Donald Trump could face up to 20 years in federal prison or be barred from running for office. Trump denies wrongdoing, claiming he had the authority to declassify documents and that the FBI seized documents protected by attorney-client and executive privilege. But his legal jeopardy extends further. The House January 6th Committee and the Department of Justice continue to investigate Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential election and incitement of the deadly U.S. Capitol attack. Donald Trump is under investigation in New York over his business and tax affairs and in Georgia regarding attempts to overturn his defeat by Joe Biden. On Monday, 15th of August, it was confirmed that Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York who became Donald Trump's personal attorney, is the target of a criminal investigation in Georgia over his role in the attempt to overturn the election. Also on Monday, 15th of August, a judge ruled that Lindsey Graham, a Trump ally and Republican senator from South Carolina, could not avoid testifying in the Georgia investigation. Having long teased a new White House run, Donald Trump seized on the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago for fundraising purposes, portraying it as an unprecedented raid and claiming mistreatment by political opponents. Senior Republicans echoed his claims, seemingly demonstrating Trump's continuing hold on the Republican Party. Recently, a Trump attorney, Alina Haber, said she thought Trump could end his legal troubles by announcing that he would not run for the presidency again. Alina Haber told Real America's Voice, "I've sat across from him every time he gets frustrated. I say to him, 'Mr. President, if you would like me to resolve all your litigation, you should announce that you are not running for office, and all of this will stop.' That's what they want." But Alina Haber also said, "I hope he runs. I told him, 'This is going to actually increase your support in your base because they just always take it a little too far. The Democratic Party, they can't get out of their own way sometimes." Meanwhile, the FBI and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security have warned of an increase in the number of violent threats against federal agents following recent unprecedented search of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida. Saying it has obtained the bulletin, CBS News reported on Sunday, 14th of August, in a joint intelligence bulletin issued on Friday, 12th of August, the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security warned that violent threats against federal law enforcement, judicial and government personnel and property had increased online and across multiple platforms, including on social media. According to the memo, since 8th of August 2022, the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have identified multiple articulated threats and calls for the targeted killing of judicial, law enforcement and government officials, associated with the Palm Beach search, including the federal judge who approved the Palm Beach search warrant. The menacing messages also include a threat to place a so-called dirty bomb in front of FBI headquarters and issuing general calls for civil war and armed rebellion. The FBI declined to confirm the existence of the intelligence bulletin on Sunday, 14th of August, but said the agency was always concerned about violence and threats of violence against law enforcement. On Friday, 12th of August, the names of two FBI agents who signed the warrant authorizing the search of Donald Trump's home were leaked and circulated online before the court officially unsealed redacted records that protected the agents' identities. The warrant was made public after FBI agents raiding Donald Trump's estate uncovered multiple sets of classified documents, including the nation's nuclear secrets. A Trump lawyer had told the Justice Department back in June that there was no more classified information at Mar-a-Lago. The warrant directed agents to seize all physical documents and records constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed, based on possible violations of the Espionage Act. Donald Trump has called for the return of the classified documents seized at his property, while congressional Republicans demand to see an affidavit that justified their seizure. The unsealing of such affidavits is highly unusual and would require approval from a federal judge. Some of Donald Trump's allies have gone as far as comparing the FBI to Gestapo, while others have accused the agency of being biased. In a post on Twitter, Anti-Defamation League Chief Executive Officer Jonathan Greenblatt condemned right-wing politicians and commentators for demonizing law enforcement. According to the warrant, Donald Trump is being investigated for potential violations of the Espionage Act, obstruction of justice, and unlawful removal or destruction of government records. Attorney General Merrick Garland approved a search of Donald Trump's estate at Mar-a-Lago recently, amid warnings by federal investigators that the missing documents presented an extraordinary threat to national security.
Hidden Files. Have you heard about the billionaire space race? What about Harvey Weinstein's abuse case? Or the Trump supporters' takeover of the U.S. Capitol? Well, chances are that you have. When it comes to major stories from mainstream media, the world is certainly a small place where the news is heard loud and clear. But in the cacophony of these major stories, there are many voices that are hushed. Stories that seem as small as a single ordinary person and yet are as large as a community, a major city, or even a nation. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, and today, in this new program, I'd like to take a pledge to provide you with a rare glimpse of news that seldom make the news, or stories that don't fit the mainstream plot, and of voices that are silent. But before we go further, let me tell you a personal story that doesn't only belong to me, one in which, had things gone differently, I would likely not be here with you today, and neither, perhaps, with the idea of this program, a story that started some 3 years ago with my arrest in the U.S.
It's just past 7:30 in the morning over here in the Iranian capital. You're going to have to begin this bulletin with a shocking development. Press TV's news anchor, Marzieh Hashemi, has been detained and imprisoned in the United States with no formal charges. Ms. Hashemi was arrested in a St. Louis airport and has now been transferred to a Washington, D.C. facility by the FBI. The reason for her arrest, as I just said, remains unclear up to this moment. She was visiting the United States to visit her ill brother, who was terminally ill, I've been hearing, and of course visiting her other relatives. Ms. Hashemi has informed her family members of her ill treatment in detention. Hashemi, a Muslim woman, was born in the United States and is an American citizen.
Such stories of being kidnapped and arrested without charge are so surreal that it's hard to believe that it can happen to you. Until, of course, it does. Growing up as a Black American, studying journalism as a student and later as a convert to Islam, I heard and read this happen to many others, of course, but I never thought that I myself could end up being kidnapped and arrested. And that's exactly the point. The numbers speak for themselves.
Mass incarceration in the United States definitely has a racial component to it. According to the United States Sentencing Commission, Black male offenders receive sentences on average 19.1% longer than similarly situated white male offenders. In addition, Black men are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white men. Following is the lifetime likelihood of imprisonment for U.S. residents born in 2001.
With me understanding well the history of policing and the judicial system in the United States, when I was arrested, I knew that anything could happen to me. I knew that there were political prisoners in the country who were still incarcerated after 40 years and had spent most of those years in solitary confinement. Though the United States denies having any political prisoners, I knew how people had been framed for so many offenses. Now, my case was quite unique in another aspect. That is, unlike the many Black men, Muslims, and activists, I had a decent following as a media personality here at Press TV. So the station kicked off an awesome information campaign about what was happening, and social media groups went into full gear getting the word out. I didn't know about all this from the inside of prison, of course, but I did see that my treatment was quickly improved, and then in a matter of days, I was released without charge. But I don't know of anyone else who has been this blessed. It's not uncommon for Black men, for Muslims, and for activists to spend years in prison, at times in solitary confinement, without there being a shred of honest evidence against them. Many end up pleading guilty as they are not told that they will not be released unless they plea bargain and spend some years in prison. So it's only fair for me to use this platform to speak about those whose cases haven't received this kind of public attention, like fellow Americans whose country claims to be the vanguard of protecting human rights around the world. when in actuality it often falls quite short of defending human rights, even according to its own constitution. Well, I'd like to bring in my special guest for this program. Welcome, Dr. Cynthia McKinney to Hidden Files.
Dr. Cynthia McKinney, as a member of the Democratic Party, Dr. McKinney served 6 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives starting from 1993. McKinney left the Democratic Party and ran in 2008 as the presidential candidate of the Green Party of the United States. She is a major critic of U.S. policy as it is related to Israel and was part of a Gaza relief boat to help to get basic supplies to the Palestinian people of Gaza. The boat was attacked by the Israeli Navy. McKinney introduced legislation to have the government release information about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. She has also introduced legislation demanding the release of government information regarding the murder of Tupac Shakur.
Thanks so much for being with us. It's a pleasure having you. Well, I'd like to start off in looking at the situation. I mean, it was amazing what happened to me and the way it went down, Cynthia. And it appears what we're seeing is the erosion of the Constitution. Your thoughts about this and how exactly is this happening? What's going on?
Well, I think what has happened in the United States is that over the years we've had a gradual shifting in even the kind of governance system that exists inside the United States. So there was a time when the Constitution was the primary law of the land and people spoke about constitutionalism. The Bill of Rights was something that rolled off the tongues of everyone, and if a law or a particular behavior was unconstitutional, it was challenged. But gradually what happened is that we saw the erosion of not just, of constitutionalism and of the Bill of Rights itself. And so a situation like what happened to you, which is unconscionable in a country that prides itself on freedom and due process and justice. But now no one's rights are guaranteed. And so you've got people who went to the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, and they are in solitary confinement. Many of them have been in solitary confinement for months now. And the situation has changed. I believe what has happened is that there has been a coup against the U.S. Constitution. And the average, ordinary U.S. citizen doesn't realize that the constitutional protections that have been guaranteed for centuries really are no longer protecting the people of the United States. And the average, ordinary U.S. citizen doesn't realize that the constitutional protections that have been guaranteed for centuries really are no longer protecting the people of the United States.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting what you said. I mean, your thoughts overall on the role of the mainstream media in misinforming people about that reality of constitutional law and the basic rights that Americans once had, but they no longer do.
We used to have media. Well, actually, there was a time when we had real media. And even though that media had its own sort of vested interest or special interest in and of itself, you could at least get half of the story from U.S. Media. It's Walter Cronkite, and that's the end of the story. Or you'd have the other fella on radio, and he'd say, and now the rest of the story. So there was always a way to dig a little bit deeper, and we had investigative journalists who were given the opportunity to hone their craft with the problems around governance. So you even had, say, for example, the Washington Post with Watergate. It was the Washington Post that broke the story.
Right.
Now the Washington Post covers up because it's been purchased indirectly by the CIA by way of Jeff Bezos and a $600 million contract for various things that Bezos was able to get by way of Amazon. So you've got a situation now where we don't even have alternative, we don't have responsible corporate media. We don't have alternative media because now the foundations have stepped in, and you've got George Soros who's pouring money into the Democratic Party, pouring money into alternative media. You've got already the other foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation and other foundations, pouring money into alternative media. So what used to be that, or what used to provide that critical analysis of what actually is happening in our political system and who is benefiting and who is losing, you don't have those questions even asked any longer. And so therefore, we've also had a situation where the courts in the United States have said that it's okay for the media to knowingly lie to its consuming audience. So now you've got legalized lying, you've got an end of investigative journalists, you've got the concentration of ownership of the media, both alternative and sort of corporate. And so now, basically, I think it was Mark Twain who said, even back then, he said that, you know, the more education you have, if you get your information from the regular media, then you're misinformed. Well, yeah, you're misinformed, and vast numbers of people in the United States are misinformed because they get their media from what they think are trusted sources, but they're no longer trusted.
What's your perspective on the internet being controlled and how that can affect people who are actually searching for the truth?
The shame of it all is that the internet itself and the research and development that gave us quote unquote social media was paid for by U.S. taxpayers. These should be, as are the airwaves for that matter, should be public resources. But there's very little public in the public resources that have been privatized. Well, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said we need a revolution of values. And I would agree with that, talking about the United States. I would just say that we need a revolution, and that would probably end it full stop. I would end it full stop. We need to do away with everything that we know because it took a turn. And the turn that it took has been to the detriment of the people. It has been to the detriment of truth. It has been to the detriment of justice. It has been to the detriment of peace. We haven't had peace since I was an adult. And now I'm entering my senior years, and we still don't have peace. And in large measure, it's because of the belligerent policies of the United States of America. So we need to build new institutions, and they can exist alongside the current ones, but eventually we've got to get rid of the current institutions that no longer work for the people and no longer represent what they are supposed to be.
Well, when we look at the situation, I mean, Cynthia, both of us are American and neither one of us are living in the United States because of various reasons now. But when we look at the situation, the increase of censorship and pressure as far as the taking away of being able to have freedom of speech, I mean, what's happening? Where are we going with this?
Unfortunately, and there are so many more who are laboring inside the United States in jobs that they don't like, jobs that don't respect them, jobs just in order to make ends meet. And they, you know, for example, you have, I guess I shouldn't name, but I have followed many of the professors who are inside the United States, and they've been punished because of their belief system. And one of them is a Palestinian American who had a job offered to him, and then the job was snatched away from him when he put something on Twitter, and it's a shame. We have another professor who wrote a very internationally acclaimed book. That book was about the Holocaust, and he told me, Cynthia, I haven't worked since then. And that's probably been about 10 years ago, 10 or maybe 15 years ago now. So people are being punished. People are suffering in their own ways because the diminution of rights and the Bill of Rights is not a document that is living and breathing in the United States any longer.
Where do you see all this going? I mean, what has to happen in your perspective?
Well, people outside sort of look at you askance when you say, I'm much more comfortable outside of the U.S. than I am inside the U.S. And people don't like outside because the United States is something, it's a dream. It's something to be aspired to live inside the United States. Every child's goal in life in certain countries is to be able to get a job in the United States, to be culled by the great culling machine and then leave one's country in the brain drain and go and help make private organizations like Google and Facebook more wealthy than they already are. The world has been turned upside down. Our values have been turned upside down, and the system is rigged, and it's rigged internationally as well. That's not just an inside the United States kind of thing. It's been rigged for hundreds of years. How do we unrig ourselves? I was at an anti-war protest, and I ended my speech by saying, "We shall take our country back." And then I thought about it for a while, and I said, I've been participating in anti-war speeches for 20 years, and we still haven't taken our country back, and we haven't ended the wars. After that last anti-war speech with the anti-war crowd that I was with, those are my people, and I thought about it, and I said, I've been protesting for 20 years. I've been saying we're going to take for 20 years, and it hasn't happened yet. So what's the missing ingredient? When Trump said that the system is rigged, it was right. It was accurate. It was an accurate statement of that people in the U.S. find with their governance system now. What was left out of that analysis, though, was what has happened to the people since. I believe that for hundreds of years, as the system was being rigged, the people of the United States adjusted to the rigging of the system, and so they adjusted themselves. They themselves became rigged along with the rigged system. The only way we can actually have values that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about is that we've got to unrig ourselves. We've got to dig deeply within ourselves and understand who we are, where we are, what our country has lost, and how we can get it back. Finally, the other thing is that not only in this sort of rigging and unrigging, the United States has never dealt with some issues like the race issue. And race is easily used. It's the kindling that is always there, that all one has to do is throw a match that has been, but it still has a little spark. And that spark is enough to just combust the entirety of the United States. That is something that has to stop. And if it doesn't stop, we will never unrig ourselves, and we will never have the revolution of values that we need, and we will never take our country back.
Well, Dr. Cynthia McKinney, thank you so much for being with me. It has been a pleasure speaking to you here, Hidden Files. the way the alternative media led this fight for my freedom and the way that on social media, hashtag Free Marzia Hashemi went viral were very effective campaigns and say a lot about the potential for alternative voices to play a bigger role in highlighting what is really taking place on the ground globally. Well, let's take a look at some of the actions held around the world during the Free Marzia Hashemi campaign.
Free, free Marzia!
Free, free Marzia!
Free Marzia Hashemi!
Free Marzia Hashemi!
Free, free Marzia!
Free, free Marzia!
Marzia Hashemi should be free!
Marzia Hashemi should be free!
She's African American. She's a woman. She's a Muslim. She has a conscience. She is intelligent. She is a journalist, and she is exposing America's dirty laundry.
Whether it's Trayvon Martin, whether it's Eric Garner, whether it's the people being starved to death in Yemen, or people being bombed in Pakistan, or people being killed in Gaza, or people being killed in Libya, Marcier's concern for humanity is that we live in peace.
Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's moral. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's just.
Free, free Hashemi!
Free, free Hashemi!
Free, free Hashemi!
Free, free Hashemi!
Up in arms on the streets of Tehran. Anger today over the detention of a prominent journalist. Marzia Hashemi is an anchor for Iran's English language state broadcaster, Press TV, and she's American.
It's a mixed bag.
Christened Melanie Franklin, born in New Orleans to Protestant parents. And inspired by the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Hashemi converted to Islam and changed her name. Her colleagues are demanding her return. Hashemi's boss says she's been mistreated while in custody and has done no wrong.
This is not an acceptable reason to make Marzia as a political pawn in a political play, in a political war with Iran.
What my experience has shown me is that we can and must try to magnify the voice of the voiceless, and we can be effective. We have to dig into files that others don't want to touch, cases that have been ignored because it just wasn't in their interest to portray. And this program is a start. Here, together, we can inspect, inform, and ignite the change that needs to take place so that more stories can have a happy ending like mine, so that people like you and me can have a chance at living a life as a person and not be reduced to yet another statistic, another number. God willing, we will be back with another episode of Hidden Files next week with another story from another corner of this vast world of ours that has so much more going on than the titles from the mainstream media. Stay curious.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.